Good afternoon. Today is Friday, January the 31st, 31st day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is oh-so-simple therapist Lou Quimby.
Thank you so much.
How you doing? Hey, who stole all your buttons?
Who? Yeah. Well,
or a different vest. Did you get a new vest for Christmas?
No. I got 10 of these, and I break out one new one every year. But I took the buttons off because it's so hard to switch over. And I can't get through security at the airport without taking my clothes off. Because the buttons are all metal.
Just depends on what the TSA individual looks like then, huh?
Oh, you know what they look like. Give me a break.
That was him, not me. Hello, McKinleyville. This afternoon, we got a couple of different things to talk about. We'll kick it around when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Lou Quimby. But before we do our quote this afternoon.
If criminals wanted to grind justice to a halt, they could do it by banding together and all pleading not guilty. Which, of course, is what they do.
Yes.
Therefore, justice grinds to a halt sometimes.
I have a question. It's been percolating me since last we got together.
Oh, now I'm in serious trouble.
Well,
you've been chewing on something.
And it wasn't in the holiday spirit.
You've been
anyway.
Chewing on something for a week, and now you're going to tell me.
Well, I think a lot of us probably have a theoretical question and then a practical question.
Really?
Yeah. Is there a personality or individuals who truly are pure evil?
It depends on how far gone they are.
A mental deficiency?
Well, you combine a childhood where you're beaten with whips, hands, clubs, chairs, lampshades. You're put to bed without dinner 3 or 4 nights a week. You're called lazy, crazy, dumb, sick, bad, stupid, silly. You're struck around the head and shoulders, which damages the brain. Sometimes your hearing, your eyes, breaks teeth. Puts you in a lot of pain, a lot of misery all the time. And a kid goes, how do I get even with this? Now, there's only 4 options. You can kill yourself, you can kill them, you can go crazy, or you can figure out some way to be okay. Well, there's all sorts of ways of going crazy without killing yourself or killing somebody else, right? So if you've been abused all the time, all the time, all the time, what happens is you start to become very, very damaged goods. And some people are so damaged that there is no repair. Some repeat child abusers are like that. Some repeat sociopaths are like that. Some murderers are like that.
But you're saying some.
Some. Well, not all. Some. You asked me if there are people who are pure evil. So it's on a continuum and a scale. So you start off with kids who have a hypercritical father. And so one of the things they can do is either cower in the corner and pee their pants, or they can learn how to be a bully on the playground. That's called identification with the aggressor. Be like dad. Start pushing people around.
And that's kind of like the bullying that we hear a lot about.
Yes. Okay. So those kids may be a bully on the playground, and then through their own devices, teachers' input, friends, other family members, learn to soften that a bit. And so they get into high school and they become a pushy football player as a way to deal with their aggression. So it's channeled into that. But if they start going for continuous headbutts, then they can damage other people, etc. They may themselves not get damaged, but they can take their aggression out. Those people don't make good salespeople. their aggression about selling the product gets way out of hand, right? Okay. So if the kid gets worse and worse, then he starts getting into physical violence as a juvenile. Then he goes to juvenile hall and goes to school there. Then he goes to prison and he goes to school there. And then he comes out and he does more violence. If he has any intelligence left, then he may learn how to do bank robberies smartly, or become a hitman for some mob or some gang and do it smartly. Or he may not have much intelligence left, and so they make all sorts of stupid mistakes.
So that's the whole abuser cycle,
yeah,
as it plays?
Yeah. Okay. So the crazy, evil kind of circumstances can be either overt or covert. They can be obvious to people at the social level where you can see their behavior. But some people hide that internal drive. So, for example, serial killers. The guy who killed all the nurses was a charming fellow and was well socialized and knew how to talk and speak and take care of himself socially. And then he goes and kills quietly.
KINS, News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Lou Quimby.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Lou Quimby. Lou, the psychopath personality, is that someone who is crazy by definition, or is that just a different classification?
They operate without guilt. See, when healthy people are in a relationship, they do things by agreement, so that what's in it for them is mutual gain. Psychopaths only operate on what's in it for me. So they learn how to be seductive, how to be sweet and good and beautiful. Or if they're not socially seductible, acceptable like that, then the sociopaths may be part of a motorcycle gang and just be thugs, right? But they have to get along with each other, but then their thuggery is obvious by their behavior. So they get along with each other because there's some safety in numbers in the gang, the identity, the group.
That mutual association.
That's their, and that's their family, if you please, except it's a grossly dysfunctional family. Okay. But societally integrated sociopaths are just smooth as silk. That's one kind of sociopath. And then there's societally integrated sociopaths who are pretty much loners but know how to behave themselves in a restaurant, in a bar, in a movie theater, and like that. And some of them get married and some of them don't. But the issue about, is anybody pure evil? It amounts to how much they do not take care of other people's feelings, behavior, thoughts, consideration of other people's intention, hopes, dreams, wishes. So it's mostly about them. Now, if you take that and you put some paranoia in there and some brain damage and some drug use damage, then you've got a house of fire. It's all about them. There's no interpersonal feelings of any substance. It's all about their own internal crazed drives.
How can someone like that, boy, you've opened up so many questions, for someone to get to that state of mind, does it have to come from an abusive situation, or is there a genetic combination that can get somebody to be psychopathic?
I'm not aware of any circumstance, either by training, education, experience, or in the literature, that has a documented example of, say, a serial killer that came from a normal, healthy household.
So it's all environmental?
No. You can have... There's two parts to a problem. Nurture nature. Nature is your organicity, your biology, your genetics, and nature is how you are raised. And that's what your parents... The three ways that children learn from their parents: by modeling, instruction, and reinforcement. So if you got a kid with some organic deficiency, and he's raised on a farm alone with parents, and his parents don't talk about feelings, and the kid makes a mistake and dad hits him with his backhand, after that explains, don't do that again, so the kid doesn't do that again. Now you got a kid who's alone on the farm and alone in his family, who does not have any kind of parental support about how he thinks, feels, believes, what his hopes, dreams, and wishes are. So his personhood is not paid attention to. I tell people parents have two jobs. One is food, clothing, shelter, and do your homework. And the second one is to pay attention to a child's personhood, what they think, feel, believe, what their hopes, wishes, dreams are, so that parents are part of the development of their child's character and moral development. But if they're ignored, they get plenty of food, clothing, shelter, and do your homework, and mom, dad go to PTA meetings or parent-teacher meetings, and the kid's getting B's and C's, what's the problem? There's no external problem. Now, if the kid has any tendency to act in as opposed to act out, then they start having dreams and fantasies and preoccupations with stuff. And then comes those three signs of problem in childhood: bedwetting, fire starting, and mutilation of animals. Hanging cats, tearing things apart, bugs apart. Not in a scientific way, but in a fascinated with death or mutilation way. If the kid doesn't do any of those three things, but instead just lives with his fantasies all the time, and then he graduates high school and he moves into the big city and he gets a job driving a delivery truck or whatever, he may start looking for opportunities to vent his rage, his anger, his angst. So a lot of serial killers, when they kill their first one, the autopsy reveals a lot of tentative cutting or scarring or hitting or bruising. And then they practice, and then they become more and more practiced, and then their serial killer killings begin to have a pattern. And there's no more hesitation with the stabbing or the hitting or the shooting or the torture. And then serial killers get better and better at what they do. And then eventually they make a mistake, or there's enough forensic evidence to trip them up. But there's a number of serial killers who go along without getting caught.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Simple Country therapist Lou Quimby. Lou, when we hear some of the different criminal actions in the news, certainly there are different levels of sophistication.
Yeah. There are levels of sophistication and levels of exposure, if you please. For example, like, how many times do you have to drive drunk to get a DUI? Well, if you look at the normal distribution curve, some people drive once and they get nailed for a DUI. And some people, I know, have driven all their lives, drink and drive, and they never get a ticket. So in the middle of that normal distribution curve, there are people who drink and drive 5, 10, 15 times, and then bang. So same, they get nailed. Well, same thing with criminal behavior. There's levels of criminal behavior. There's petty theft and petty breaking and entering. And some people can get away with that for a little while. Some people get nailed on their first B&E. So there's levels of behavior. Some people get into bar fights on some regular basis and they manage to get out of it. And then one time maybe they hit a guy wrong and he falls down and splits his head open on the spittoon and they kills him. Now he's got a problem because it's no longer a bar fight. It's manslaughter. Same thing with like the recent thing with the priest. This guy may have been doing low-level stuff for years without getting caught or busted or noticed. And then all of a sudden, whatever's welling up inside of him takes over and he goes berserk. Now he's had it. He's not going anywhere.
Now, does going berserk, crazy, etc., tend to mean non-methodical? Or can you still be in a rage and be very methodical?
Oh, you can be in a rage and all the fantasies you've had about torture or mutilation or getting even or whatever. All the fantasies you had just start playing out, right? Methodical has to do with the behavior that is measured and thought about or planned out, right? And that doesn't have to be rationally driven. If you're a professional hitman, then you follow people around and you learn their behaviors, and then you hit them when you can get them alone somewhere. Some of the early mob hits in Prohibition, there's one where they go into the barber shop and unload a couple of 38s into the guy in the barber chair. That's dramatic and it's kind of stupid if the guys didn't want to be recognized. So that's kind of semi-amateurish crap, right? But if you're a professional, then you want to minimize all of the circumstances that'll get you killed or put away yourself or recognized, right? So a professional hitman wants to be anonymous, thank you very much. They don't brag, they don't drink, and then talk about it in a bar. Gee, that's all amateur stuff, right? Okay, that's for people who say, quote, do that for a living. But if you got somebody who's gone berserk on you, yeah, they can have fantasized about what they're going to do and then do it. And they're still crazy when they're doing it. But doesn't mean they're not responsible.
The school shootings that we've been, I guess now we can say mall shootings and shootings and stuff, with the younger people doing it, the under 20 crowd. Does that fall into the profiles that you were talking about, or
it's one of the levels? Right?
Okay, because I know a lot of folks will try to point to the video games and the numbing of death, and whether or not that's
the difficulty is many things are true simultaneously. If you look at some of the early martial arts games, where you beat somebody up and then you jerk their spine out of their body and hold it up triumphantly, right? That can desensitize children to the internal and the external realities of violence, right? kids who take martial arts classes are dealing with each other, flesh and blood, and they have some idea about the realities of the engagement, right? You hit somebody, they hit you, you're going to feel something, right? This is quite different than the freebies you get in a game where you can beat the snot out of somebody and there's blood all over the place, and then, time for dinner, honey, and you shut the game down and go for dinner, right? So when kids pull out an Uzi in a school shooting, first of all, they got to get an Uzi. Where's that come from? They got to know somebody, or if it isn't their dad's Uzi, what's dad doing with an Uzi? If they go in with a couple of hunting rifles and a couple of 38 specials, which are common, and a whole backpack full of ammo, you got to go, okay, where are they getting all that? And who's in control of all that ammo, and what kind of training have they had? No, maybe they've had some training in how to handle firearms, so they're not totally unprepared. Where's the attitude?
It's funny, though. You don't hear that, though, with some of these. Oh, well, no, he would go hunting with his dad each fall for the last 7 years, so he's a well-trained marksman.
He knows exactly what he's doing with a weapon, exactly.
Yeah, that doesn't surface.
I've never heard that about any of these circumstances. So then, where does the attitude come from? Well, first of all, those are incidents of rage. Going into a school and killing children and teachers randomly, that's rage.
So
where does that come from? Well, it's built up somewhere, and this is the outlet, which means they don't have some other outlet for how to deal with their feelings, emotions. And so then they have some sense of entitlement that they deserve to go and do this thing as some act of righteousness or retribution or release of some sort. And so then they go do it. And then there's two things that follow that I've seen on TV over and over and over again. The first one is a big outburst of gun control. And the second one is the interview with the kid. I'm really, really sorry, man. I don't know what got into me. So my approach to that is, well, what were the kids doing in their home? Who was talking to them about their personhood, what they think, feel, and believe, how things are going at school, what are their conflicts, how are they resolving them, what do they deal with it, right? A lot of parents do not invite children's friends over for dinner, or friends and their parents over for dinner, so that the two families, the two kids, get to know each other in a situation different than hanging out on the street corner and swapping lies and fantasies. So the situation in which a child grows up, I think, influences a lot about what restraint they learn in a social situation.
It can set them up.
And then conversely, what kind of restraints they have in a psychological situation.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Lou Quimby.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:47. We're back talking shop this afternoon with Lou Quimby. Lou, you've talked and shared about some of the external behaviors that might be indicators if somebody was having tendencies towards violence or acting out or rage.
Right.
We had an incident in Ferndale earlier this week with road rage.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Well, as reported.
Yeah.
Guy in one of the big commercial trucks was driving, and another guy on the other side was coming at him, and they both swerved to miss.
Two trucks?
Yeah, one was a pick-em-up, and one was a commercial
rig.
Okay,
big rig.
And the guy in the pickup truck came over, ripped open the door of the truck, and started wailing on the guy.
Did he say why?
Because he thought he was coming after him.
He thought the big rig
drove him off the road. At least that's the general gist of what I
heard. Right.
I thought, okay, now to me, and obviously I'm way wrong here, rage was a short-term flash, uncontrollable emotional.
Oh, no.
But how long can rage last?
Think of it this way. There's a small pile of chips, and you put a little gas on it, and you light it, and it goes woof, and then burns itself out. And then there's people who carry around a 12 to 20 foot tall pile of tinder brush soaked in gasoline, waiting for somebody else to throw a match to it. And that thing will burn for minutes, hours, right? And they're just waiting for some righteous justification to vent their rage. And if they've got any little bit of paranoia in them at all, like somebody's out to get me, then all the commercial truck driver has to do is have a momentary lapse of attention and do a slight shift, drift over the center line, then correct himself. And then the paranoid guy, he's out to get me. I'll show him who's boss.
And is that kind of a scenario the really... I know it sounds redundant. Abusive child abuse? Is that what they just have bigger piles to act out against the vulnerable?
It doesn't. See, there's all kinds of abuse in childhood. It isn't all about being hit upside the head and shoulders with a baseball bat or dad's belt.
Right.
No, there's all kinds of attitudinal abuse. You're nothing but half a grain above an idiot. What's the matter with you? You're going to wind up just like your uncle, alcoholic and in prison. That's abusive. Because it
plants. But that's not the pile of tinder for a rage,
that,
is it?
Oh, that builds the pile. You get that over and over and over.
For again. The abuser or the abused or both?
The abused kid. Now, the dad who's doing all that stuff has had his own problems historically, of course, or he wouldn't be doing that. You don't do that to children. So dad's got his own problems, and he passes them on to the children. And this is a generational thing I see over and over and over again in therapy.
So to break it, you have to do something.
Somebody who's in my office gets to break it. They get to stop the pattern.
Thanks for coming by.
You bet.
We've been talking shop with Lou Quimby. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.